You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. That way you get new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give this series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. Of course, we've had some great guests drop by here lately, including Justin Vernon from Bon Iver, Sarah McLachlan, Tracy Thorne from Everything But the Girl, Jeff Bridges, the dude himself, to talk movies and music, Finn Cole, who starred not only in Peaky Blinders, but is in the movie Last Breath, Michael McDonald, back with the Doobie Brothers, Sophia Carson, Kyle Allen, and Sebastian D'Souza to discuss The Life List on Netflix, Ben Barnes, Talib Kweli, Peaches, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special Rewind episode with the most successful duo in music history, Daryl Hall and John Oates. One's a blue-eyed soul pioneer with a voice built to cut through FM static. The other's a mustachioed master of melodic restraint. Together, they blurred the lines between rock, R&B, and pop, then turned that blur into a decades-long chart domination. We're talking Rich Girl, Maneater, Private Eyes, and a greatest hits catalog that basically is adult contemporary radio. But behind the hits, an unlikely creative partnership, a surprising amount of independence from major labels, and a deep bench of songs that go far beyond what you remember from your uncle's cassette deck. It's Daryl Hall and John Oates, of course, because we can't call them Hall and Oates, here for a special Rewind episode. Now, we're going to start back in 2018 when John Oates, jumped on the phone with me to talk about, he was having a really busy year right on the heels of releasing his Americana-themed solo record, Arkansas. He and Daryl debuted their first new song together in, at that point, 15 years, called Philly Forget Me Not, was written with Pat from Train. I believe it would go on to become their final song together. That's where we start this special Rewind. It's Kyle Meredith with Hall & Oates, John Oates.
Hey, Kyle, John Oates here.
I know we got a lot to talk about. You have a lot going on, as always. A new solo album and a biography as well. I thought we'd start with the newest of those, though, with this latest cut, Philly Forget-Me-Nots. Where did this come from? It seems like it's sort of out of nowhere.
Well, it did come out of nowhere. Pat Monahan found the song from two young songwriters who came up with it. Came up with the original idea and gave it to Pat, and Pat got together with Daryl. I was on tour on my solo album, and those guys started working on it, and we pulled it together, and then we recorded it. So it came together really quickly, and we just thought it was a cool idea, and obviously with Pat being from Pennsylvania and, you know, us obviously being from Philly, we just thought it would be a really cool thing to have a record out on the radio to promote this new tour that we're doing together.
You know what gets me about it, when I first hear it, it sounds like classic Daryl Hall and John Oates, but with current production, which is sort of a trick that I don't think a lot of artists can pull off.
You're right. You're 100% right about that. It's kind of got this modern, very modern pop production, but it's got a certain thing. And plus, you know, when you hear Daryl and Pat singing and me singing, it has a sound. There's a sound there that is immediately recognizable. So I think that's part of it as well.
You said, you know, two other songwriters had wrote the song, but there's a little touch to the old song Rich Girl in there. Did you all add that yourselves?
Yeah, it was one of Daryl's things. You know, he can't help himself.
I thought it was interesting, too, because the first line about being gone, it sort of works on one of those double-sided ways. Like, we're not just talking about Philadelphia, possibly.
You know, there's a little bit of a nod to that, but not really. Because, you know, Daryl and I have never really been gone. We've had our ups and downs, you know, in terms of public visibility and in public popularity. But, you know, the reality is, for our hardcore fans, we've always been around. We've never stopped. We've taken some time off, but we've never retired, never done a fake reunion tour or a fake farewell tour, which I think is hysterical that all these people are doing. But anyway, you know, that's one of those things. The cool thing is that you can read into it as much as you want.
Well, and, you know, you're talking again about how the production sounding and the style of song and everything. I mean, you, back 70s and 80s, you all were able to tap into something that connected with so many people, you know, and I don't know if that's just great timing and luck and what, you know, some artists talk about, or if there was a formula to go along. But when I look at, you know, the image of pop music, how it's changed over the years, but in the sense when you hear a song like this, it's just the basics of a catchy song still works.
Hey, listen, it's a great hook. And you know what? We made a career out of great hooks. So this is just yet another one in a long line of them.
So I don't know. I mean, I want to ask, does this lead to more? Can you see yourselves doing more than this? Because it's a really good song. It would be sad to me if this doesn't lead to more really great songs.
You know what? Perhaps. I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. But the thing is, you know, I think in this day and age, making an album together is not really something that either of us are interested in. We have so much else going on. But making a series of singles is a really cool thing, because the world is really kind of oriented toward it's become a world of singles at this point. So if that was the case, and that's a cool thing to do, why not?
Well, I certainly hope so. Like I said, I'm enjoying this one, a pleasant surprise, as is the new record. And we can go on over to your new solo record, Arkansas. Tell me the story about this one, too, because it's sort of got a concept to it, right?
Yeah, well, it's basically a return and a rediscovery of my earliest musical influences, the stuff that I was doing before I met Daryl Hall. I was a folk blues guitar player, and you know, I was very deeply steeped in the Americana roots music tradition. You know, Mississippi John Hurt, Doc Watson, Son House, all this kind of stuff. That was my sweet spot. And over the years, you know, with my collaboration with Daryl, obviously we went in different directions and, you know, doing different things together. And it's kind of that side of me got, you know, just kind of put off to the side, basically. I wrote a memoir called Change of Seasons, which came out in 2016. And that book caused me to have to go back into my memories and you know, really rediscover a lot about myself in the early days. And that led me to translating that into basically a musical statement. And what I did was, I've been living in Nashville for the last few years and have a lot of friends who are very much involved in the roots music, Americana style of music. And I began to rediscover it in myself, and I said, you know, I want to make a record that really represents, you know, who I was, or you know, who I was in my earliest, you know, incarnation, so to speak. And that's what happened. And I started out to do a tribute to Mississippi John Hurt, who's one of my childhood heroes. And as I got into the record, I wanted to expand the idea to music that was contemporary with him back in the 1920s and 1930s. And I started rediscovering all these great, or actually early American pop music. People like Jimmy Rogers, Emmett Miller, people who were having actual million-selling records back in the earliest days of recording and phonograph and radio. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You know, I've been making hit records my whole life, and I didn't even know what the earliest first hit record was. And that was the key that unlocked the theme of the album.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with John Oates.
Yeah, I mean, having songs as old as that, as you're saying, from the 20s and 30s, it's interesting, too, because, you know, calling it pop music in the sense that we're talking about pop music a few minutes ago, you know, there's a, I don't know, that line that some things never change in a way.
Pop music is pop music because it's popular.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, when you can capture the public's imagination, when you seem to be, you know, when your sound and what you're saying and the records you're making are in sync with the kind of the, I don't want to get too, you know, academic about this, but when what you're doing is in sync with the kind of the zeitgeist of the public at that moment, that's when music connects. And that's what making pop music is all about. And it's not easy to do. Sometimes you hit it, sometimes you don't. And, you know, we've been very fortunate over the years to been able to hit that sweet spot many, many times. And so it looks like we hit it again.
Now, why Arkansas? Because it's kind of interesting also that you have one song with one group out about Philadelphia and an album out about Arkansas.
It's a regional thing. You know, I've always been oriented toward the regional music in America. And it's something that in the modern era, regional music has kind of disappeared because of the, you know, the ubiquity of radio and formats being, you know, nationalized across the board and homogenized. But back in the days when I was a kid, regional music was very powerful and very unique and distinct. You know, you'd go, New York didn't sound like Philadelphia. Philadelphia didn't sound like Memphis. Memphis didn't sound like Chicago. Chicago didn't sound like L.A. All the music that came from these various regional parts of the country were unique and distinct. And I always loved that about American popular music. If you go into the other world of, for instance, Americana music, you'll find that there's young artists all over the country who are really doing the same thing I'm doing, you know, tapping back into the roots of their region and the roots of their families and the roots of certain things that interest them that are uniquely regional in America. And I think there's a lot of that going on, you know, perhaps not in obviously top 40 radio and things like that, but in other formats.
So that's sort of, you know, talking about the wider scope of Arkansas right there. The title track, is that one of your originals as well? Is that specifically the original?
Yeah, that's the title track that I wrote after a trip to a little place called Wilson, Arkansas, outside of Memphis. And I went and did a show there with my band, and we literally went out after the show into the cotton fields along the banks of the Mississippi River and Highway 61, the Blues Highway. We ran right through the town, and I said, "Man, this is it right here. This is where, you know, this is like kind of a vortex where so much of this great American music tradition has come up from the Deep South and eventually, you know, made its way northward and spread out to the cities and evolved into rock and roll." So it struck me as a kind of a musical touch point, and I wanted to celebrate it.
And you've got so many great guests on here. I noticed one of our favorites, Sam Bush.
Yeah, a legend, a true legend and a real force of nature. Sam embraced me early on when I first came to Nashville. We became friends, and I played with his band, and he's introduced me to the Americana community, and he's an ambassador for that. And, you know, I have people like Russ Paul, who's currently out touring with Dan Auerbach, and just these great musicians who populate the album and have really supported me and have been just a joy to play with.
Yeah, it must be a cool way to spend the year, too, kind of touring both sides of the game here with Daryl and then with the you know, with this group and kind of, you know, I don't know, stretching all of those muscles, I guess.
Oh man, it's so much fun for me because I never get bored because I'm doing this incredible roots blues show that's really down and dirty and very simple and very, you know, really kind of hardcore basic stuff. And then, you know, I put a different hat on and go out into these giant arenas with Daryl and with Train and with the great Hall & Oates band. And it's a completely different, you know, set of musical disciplines, you know, a different way of thinking about music. The venue, you know, the arena is huge. The sound is different. There's production. There's video screens. So it's our whole, you know, I mean, really, it keeps you on your toes. And I'm never bored. That's one thing I can guarantee you.
You'd mentioned also that the book that you put out with Change of Seasons. How was it writing the story of your life? Does it feel like you've, you know, I don't know, not that you've put it to bed or anything, but now that that's, you know, sort of been cataloged in the box?
Well, it's cataloged up to about the year 2000, and now there's 18 more years to go, and I haven't even touched on that. And that's some of the most profound and important 18 years in my life. My move from Colorado to Nashville, my starting a solo career, all the amazing people and experiences that I've had. So I really couldn't cram it all in. I mean, I was at 400 pages and realized I hadn't even touched the more recent stuff that I was doing. So I thought I'll put the brakes on that particular volume. And, you know, I'm actually getting ready to work on a second volume now.
Is it hard for you to get into that mode, to the writing mode? Do you have to get to a certain spot?
It will be right now because I've been in my you know, Arkansas mode, you know, playing live, and now I'm getting into the Hall & Oates mode playing live. But once I get out on the tour with Daryl, I have a lot of free time on my hands. You know, you're sitting in hotels, you're sitting on airplanes and buses, and there's a lot of time in the day except for that 2 hours when you're on stage. So you got to fill it somehow or another. And that's how I wrote the last book. The last book I wrote when I was on tour because I had all this time and I thought, you know, I'm sitting around. I might as well be writing. So I think I'm going to start this next volume while I'm on this tour.
Oh, well, I look forward to that, John. Thank you for the call today and for this music. I'm really enjoying Arkansas. And again, the new Hall & Oates song is super cool to have around again. So,
oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith, a special Rewind episode, my conversations with Daryl Hall and John Oates. Now, with Daryl, it was 2022 when we caught up. He was releasing his sort of a best-of compilation called Before After, best-of his solo albums. And we got to discuss creating with Robert Fripp, covering Todd Rundgren, and making an album with Eurythmics' Dave Stewart. All that and more. It's part two of this special Rewind. Kyle Meredith with Hall & Oates, Daryl Hall.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great, man. So you've got this excellent new collection. It's called Before After. Takes your solo albums and streams them in a way to make this really interesting kind of collection album on its own with the additions of the Daryl's House's cuts. What led to this finally happening?
Well, I just wanted to put... I feel like I've been working in this in two worlds, two parallel worlds for decades, right? And you know, everybody knows about what I do with Hall & Oates and all that. I mean, that's everywhere. But people are not as aware of what I've done on my own as a solo artist. You know, people are aware of Live from Daryl's House for sure, but they're not as necessarily aware of all these solo albums that I've made over the years. And I wanted to do a body of work compilation and bring that to the front. I've been playing those songs on the TV show for years and years, but I thought that nobody's necessarily familiar with the recorded versions. So I figured I'd put those out too. And a little, so it's basically what I've been doing for the past 50 years outside of Hall & Oates.
Yeah. And you know, and the thing that we see right away is how many sounds that you were able to touch upon, you know, from the late 70s all the way up until the one that came out a handful of years ago. But, you know, and I don't know, you went from sort of the prog thing. There's you touch on jazz a little bit here, you know, you bring in the R&B beats a little bit over here, but you never stay in one place like too long, you know, as your own journeyman in this solo world. Where did that come from? Because you sort of never just said, well, this is my sound. This is where I'm going to settle.
Well, I, you know, at the core of it all, I'm a soul singer. I mean, I think everybody knows that. No matter what production or song style revolves around that, there's a core of what I do with my voice. But Having said that, I explore a lot of different directions. I mean, it's just my nature. And I also like to collaborate with a lot of people, as has also been obvious over the years. I've worked with a lot of different people, and I am influenced by that, by the collaboration. So all those elements cause things to be, very eclectic, really.
Well, when we back up to that that first solo album, we're looking at Sacred Songs, and you know, Fripp said it too at the time, that what you were doing was completely comparable to Bowie over my shoulder right here, especially the Station to Station, the Young American style right there. Approaching that as a vocalist, though, as you're talking about, as a soul singer, what was that like? Especially, you know, I look at a song like NYCNY, you know, that, how was that for you?
Well, it's all natural to me. I open my mouth and sing. You mentioned that song. We sort of wrote that spontaneously. I had the lyrics, and Robert just started playing things, and we taught it to the rhythm section that we were using, and I just screamed it all out. I mean, it happened very easily like that, very spontaneous, first takes, you know, all that kind of thing, which is what I like to do.
Did it feel different to you though, at all, as it ended up sounding?
In the best of ways, yeah. I like it when it feels different. I mean, that's the whole idea. I like to expand myself, and I like to surprise myself and be surprised by other people. That's what really makes it exciting to me.
I mean, it sounded effortless, but that's what I was curious about. Like even another song, like that crazy dreamy breakdown in Babs. It's kind of one of those things again, like at any point did you go, okay, this is going to be different?
I knew it was going to be different from the get-go because, you know, Robert and I, we were friends before we started doing this and making the record. We put two people like us together who come from very different musical backgrounds. And what's going to come out of it? Something unusual and different is going to come out of it for sure. And we were expecting that, and we were happy that it happened. It happened so easily. That was the beauty of it all. It was so effortless and easy.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned, he brought up the Bowie thing. Were you ever able to talk to Bowie about this? Because it seemed like that was right in his wheelhouse as well. Like that could have been.
I knew David pretty well, but I never spoke to him specifically about that. No, but I think Robert did. You know, because Robert was playing on those Bowie records, and Brian Eno too. I mean, we're sort of a. It's a circle that I was a part of.
That could have been an interesting collaboration right there. That's, you know, it's something that will never happen now, but
yeah, I know.
A fan can dream. On the opposite end of the timeline, you know, we talk about the record that came out, I think it was 2014. Like you completely found the groove. I can't say found the groove. You've hit the groove many times, but as we used to say, those tracks were so in the pocket. Talking to you is like talking to myself, Eyes for You. Take me back there because that's the more recent album right here. How did you end up on this sound that you did for that record? Because I absolutely love it.
It was very much made at home. I want to call that a family album. You know, my stepdaughter was on that record. It started with T-Bone. Unfortunately, the tragedy of it was right in the beginning of the production, T-Bone suddenly passed away. And so I had to scramble around and figure out how was I going to continue this after I had done all the prep work with T-Bone. And luckily I had my other friend, guitar player, Paul Pesco, stepped in, and who is a producer as well. And he sort of kind of covered for T-Bone and an engineer, producer, keyboardist named Greg Beek, who I've worked with for years and years, also was involved in this. It was a very organic, almost like a family album.
That beat driven sound really works well for you.
Yeah, I hear you.
Love to see you explore some of that more. So as I mentioned, the other half of this, of course, is we get these live from Daryl's house cuts on here, which I started thinking about, you know, when the pandemic hit and everyone switched to this right here, to Zoom, and you had everyone suddenly doing the at-home performances, which you had been doing for 15, 20 years at that point. Like, did that come across to you? Like, right. Yeah, a little funny. Like, I've been doing this. This isn't new.
Of course. What do you think? Yeah, I got to tell you something, though. The reason that I started doing it, or one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons I started doing Daryl's House in the first place 15 years ago was it was right after the there was a SARS epidemic, and it stopped my tour. I was doing with John. We were going to do a tour of Canada, and it got canceled because Canada sort of shut down the ability to do concerts. That this is like 2008 or something, some year like that, right? And I thought to myself then, you know, this there was something prophetic about it. I said to myself, this could happen. This could happen big time. Well, you know, and so I said, what could I do? What would be the alternative to touring around the world and getting in rooms with people? And I figured that out 15 years before everybody else had to figure it out.
Isn't that interesting? SARS was one liftoff, and then we turn around and here it is, COVID is the other liftoff. That's
yep.
Unfortunate, but very, very interesting how that worked out. You know, these versions are great, of course. You know, we talk about one of the pre-releases that you've given out with Here Comes the Rain Again. You've got Dave Stewart on that one. These songs and the way you've done these collaborations, these duets, these team-ups that you've done throughout the history of this this series right here, you know, I think artists get asked that question every once in a while of what's the song that you wish you would have wrote? Does this give you that chance to sort of step into those shoes? Did you ever look at it like that?
Well, you mean when I collaborate with other people? You talk about LFDA?
Yeah, on covers and stuff, like, you know, the songs that aren't yours.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do a lot of covers. I have done some over the years. Just the LFDH experience in general allowed me to interact with songs that I could say I wish I had written, you know, that came up quite a few times during in the series. You know, the one I did with, I love, I mean, Dave Stewart and I are good friends, and I love what he's done over the years with Annie and other people. I like his writing style. I think it's a very similar to the way I think. In fact, we do write very well together. And to do that song, Here Comes the Rain Again, was a really natural thing. After the show was over, we set up in another room where I happened to have a grand piano at the time, and we just did that. Again, it was one of those one take things where he just got an acoustic guitar and I had the piano, and we just played the song and it was recorded.
And it's proof, you know, as they say, a good song stands regardless of the production. I mean, you know, the way we hear that song most of the time on the radio and TV or whatever, you know, the era is there, that production is there. You all strip that and the song still stands just as tall.
In some ways, even more. It really just, you know, emphasizes the song.
Did I hear that you're working with Dave again on more new music?
Yeah, I just came back from the Bahamas where Dave has a house. I used to have a house there. And I was there for a month and we did like 8 songs. We're whipping, you know, and it's great. It's great to work with him. You know, we have a lot of fun. We laugh a lot, but we get a lot done. It's a really great relationship.
Yeah. As we talk about styles, your styles that you've touched on through the years, what is the soup that you all make when you put the ingredients of you and Dave together on a new record?
Well, there's a certain kind of, I mean, Dave's got his own brand of soul, you know, our chord choices and things like that. It's hard to describe the writing process and what we choose, but it all falls very naturally to both of us. You know, we like the same sounds. We like the same ideas. We like the same subjects for songs, things like that.
I guess in sort of past and relevant, as we're talking about that, it's kind of interesting what you were telling me about the, you know, the SARS and the COVID. You've got a track on here, What's Gonna Happen to Us, which is just a beautifully written song. I love the lyrics of that, but it's one of those songs that has started feeling eerily relevant again with the war that's happening. You get those moments with your songs, and maybe they're not the best reasons to come around, but are you starting to identify with a track like that in What's Happening Again?
Man, that song, What's Gonna Happen to Us, I hate to say how relevant it is. You know, I mean, you listen to the lyrics of that song. What I did is I wrote about the world and I wrote about an interpersonal relationship and sort of combined them. And that's what that song is about. How things can be what's the word? They can be disruptive between two people, and they can be disruptive between two countries, you know. And it's really, it's certainly relevant and valid right now.
When that happens, I mean, you're going to be hitting the road again. Does that song get its moment in a spotlight because of what's happening?
I've been thinking about it. I mean, it's so timely that I don't want to bring people down, but I'm still deciding what I'm going to, even though I'm going out on the road, we're going into rehearsals in about a little more than a week. I'm still not sure what I'm going to play because I have so many directions I could go in. And certainly that's one that would be valid to play without a question.
And the other part of the tour we should bring up, you're going out with your old buddy, Todd Rundgren, who, that's going to be fun. I mean, your all's relationship goes back how far at this point?
Whew. I've known Todd since we were kids, you know, since the early 70s. In a long, long time. It's great, you know. I mean, we've gone in and out of musical relationships over the years, and I have so much respect for Todd. You know, he's a one of a kind, but yet I really relate to his music. We have the same roots. We have the same roots, that's for sure. I mean, we grew up very close to each other.
Do you get to rib him about not doing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I understand it. I almost didn't, you know.
Is that right?
Well, if you haven't ever, I don't know if you ever saw the acceptance speech, but it wasn't very friendly.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch that one again. I'm baited. I'm interested. That's good. You know, I don't know your reasoning. That's got to be such an odd moment for anybody, even in the happiest times, you know, to what music is, to what rock and roll stands for, and then to be there, you know, in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I'm happy to be in that fraternity because it represents something that is every art form has its golden age, and I do believe that I was lucky enough to participate in that, and still do participate in that golden age. But the golden age is sort of faded now. But at the same time, I have less than kind feelings towards some of the people that are involved in that whole organization.
That ends up being, I mean, you got Dolly Parton for her own different reasons, who just went, nah, that's okay. I'll take myself back out of that. That's completely respectable.
I thought that was really cool. I thought what she said and what she did and her reasons were really, really right on.
Doesn't she always knock it out of the park though?
She's great, man. She's a happening person.
On subject of other people, I got one more question about this. I didn't know this and was kind of surprised when I found it in the notes. Right as Rain. Is that true that Joni Mitchell is backing you up on that?
Yeah. Yeah, she's in there. We knew she was in town, and I used to know Joni very well. And we were doing it in London, and she was in London, and I called her up and said, "Do you want to come and sing on a session?" And she came up to North London where Dave's studio was, and we had a great night that. I mean, we were completely out of our minds that night. I mean, it was just a lot of laughing. Everybody was playing everybody else's instrument, And I said, "Why don't you sing these background parts?" And I, you know, what she was talking about, and that's what she did. And there it is.
It's kind of amazing. I will say though, to have Joni Mitchell and to be like on the background though, it's you're not up front. It's,
you know, that whole album. I talked to Dave about that. I said, "You know what? We had Joni Mitchell in the room. We didn't even try writing a song with her. What's the matter with us?"
It's incredible, but you know, she's on there though. That's
she's
still something.
There. And it's all right.
One of the great voices. I backtracked real quick just to say that one of the other bonus cuts on here, you're with Todd and you guys do Can We Still Be Friends. For any reason, did you land on that track specifically?
I've always liked that song. I liked it when he wrote it. I didn't even know who he, well, I won't go into it. I know the personal background of that song. As I said before, I really like most of all of his songs, but there's something really hits me on that one. I love the melody. I like what it's about. I like everything about it.
Those chords, man, you're talking about the melody. I can't even compare that to anything else. I mean, it's got this melancholiness to it, but it's not so sad.
It's poignant. That's how I look at it. It's those chords. It's his melody and those chords. And I can relate to both of those things with him.
Yeah. I mean, as a songwriter, that's one of those moments. You know, I don't feel like you could probably hit that too often, you know, getting something like that. But it sounds great what you've done with it. So just compliments.
Thank you.
And Daryl, again, this whole collection, it's so fun to hear how you've kind of put everything together to make this an album. I mean, I don't know how you pulled that off with the track listing. I mean, I think you've talked about in other interviews that it was really thought out. This isn't chronological, right?
No, it's not. I had that choice, but I thought it would make it more like a timeless idea to treat it like the whole thing was just one, a big album, you know, and mix the songs up and make it flow in an emotional way.
Well, it's definitely a great introduction, especially for the folks who don't know the music, as you pointed out. I am so looking forward to hearing this next record, especially whatever you and Dave are doing together. Any timeline on that? Are you looking for, I mean, it sounds like you're still in the process, but is this like, hey, let's try to get it out in a year?
Yeah, we're in the process. I just need to find the time, and Dave needs to find the time. We'll get it done.
All right. It was so great talking to you, man. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll see you out there on the road.
You will indeed. Okay, thank you, Ben.
And there it is, my conversations with John Oates and Daryl Hall. Thanks to both, and thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week, just like this one. You can grab us, of course, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you're going to head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Colin Blunt, Stone of the Zombies, Joni Mitchell, Barty Strange, Simple Minds, The Cure, Propellerheads, R.E.M., The Smashing Pumpkins, Love Among Freaks, Mumford & Sons, Bob Mould, Courtney Barnett, Nirvana, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Morcheeba, Sharon Van Etten, and my interview with Anthony Michael Hall, legendary 80s, 90s actor, still going strong today. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.